Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. There are moments in all our lives when we have to accept that what we're doing isn't what we're meant to be doing. For licensed psychotherapist and global relationship and empowerment expert Terry Cole, that moment came with the realization that her highly paid, fast-paced, caffeine, nicotine and adrenaline-charged career as a talent agent for actors and supermodels really wasn't making her happy. So she listened to the voice in her heart that was asking her to do something more meaningful than making supermodels richer and set about transforming her life. She got her master's degree in clinical psychotherapy from New York University. She adopted a healthy lifestyle. She got married and she started her therapy practice. And over the past two decades, she's helped stay-at-home mums, celebrities and Fortune 500 CEOs achieve their own transformation and sustainable change. She's published the book, Boundary Boss, The Essential Guide to Talk True, Be Seen, and finally, Live Free. And she continues to inspire over 250,000 people weekly through her blog, social media platforms, signature courses, and popular podcast. Transformation rarely happens on its own. Inspiration and guidance come in many forms, from mentors, teachers, our own and others' experiences, and of course, a favourite source of inspiration, books. So joining me now to share the 10 best spiritual books that inspired her the most on her life journey, along with insights that shaped the person she's become and the work she's doing now, is Terry Cole. Terry Cole, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
So tell me, what do books mean to you? I mean, what kind of role have they played in your life?
They've really played a huge role, especially in my pivoting away from what I was doing or pivoting away from a painful place in my life. The self-help movement was really instrumental because there's an accessibility, of course, to books, right? I was in college, but I was seeking something to help the pain that I was feeling. And I found self-help books and I was like, oh my gosh. There is something else I could do. I can change what's not working in my life. I can become empowered. And so for me, I mean, I read for pleasure as well, but I really am more of a seeker of knowledge, especially, I mean, nothing motivates you more than pain, you know?
Very, very true. Was it very hard for you to pick 10 books?
No, it wasn't. But I realized that a lot of these books are very old books. The books that I've chosen, many of them, most of them, because I was really thinking about what had the most impact on my life. And they really were books that I read in my 20s that set the course for the rest of my life in some ways.
Do you think you were always walking a spiritual path, or is that something that came when you made that transition from that career to something different?
I think I always was a seeker. I always believed. I was raised in a family where, you know, we went to church on Sunday. We were Presbyterian, though, so it's not hardcore. Do you know what I mean? It's like religion light a little bit. And when we got to be teenagers and didn't want to go anymore, it was okay. It wasn't that, but that planted a seed of something else. And my parents believed in something else. And so I'm not attached to organized religion personally, but the thought that the divinity of this universe, how amazingly, intelligently it is designed from nature to animals. I always knew. I was like, this didn't just happen. But in my 20s, and when I started on the self-help journey, that also really accelerated my spiritual journey as well.
Yeah. So your list, is it in a, you know, chronological order as you read them, or is it just the 10 that came to you and you put them down as they came to you?
Yeah, I didn't do them in chronological order. So they're not necessarily, because if they were, then the road less traveled should have been earlier.
Yeah, because you do say that was one of your very first. So let's switch it around. Let's put that one first and tell us, because I love that book too. It's amazing how often I come across, you know, guests whose favorite books are my favorite books, and this is one of them. Massive impact it made on me. So tell us about how it affected you.
It really, really affected me in a profoundly positive way, because it opened up my eyes. The way that M. Scott Peck writes in this book, I saw this possibility for my young life. I was probably 20 years old when I read this book. And what I learned was that it didn't really matter what happened in the past, and it didn't really matter what sort of cards I was dealt in life, so to speak, right? That I had the power to go, wow, this hand stinks, I want different cards, or I want a new deck, or I'm making up an entirely new game. I don't even like this game. And that's really changed my life, because it had a huge impact on me stopping drinking. I'd stopped drinking my senior year of college, because I saw, right? I had this one choice to make, where I saw my life with booze, which would have probably been still successful. I came from a long line of high-functioning alcoholics, so it isn't like it would have been a total disaster, but it wouldn't have been what I wanted it to be. And so on the other side of the fence, I saw this blank slate. It was like this blank canvas. And that book really helped me see that I had that, besides an amazing therapist I was seeing at the time as well. But that book made me go, wow, like I could reject that hand of being a high-functioning alcoholic in my life. And I could just decide that I'm not doing that. I'm doing something else. I'm not sure what it is. But this adventure over here, where the canvas was blank, certainly looked better than the crap ton of, you know, self-lit fires and problems that would have been on the other side.
Yeah. Was that book instrumental in that change that you made from the, you know, the fast-paced career to wanting to become a psychotherapist yourself?
You know, in a way it was, because you have to think, we ingest, right? We consume this knowledge from books, from other people. And then that becomes a part of our psychological schema. So my unconscious organization in my mind, I knew I could make a power pivot. I did it when I was 20, and nobody understood why I was stopping drinking with 3 months left of my senior year of college. And I was like, if I could stop drinking now, I could stop drinking, right? Like, this is going to be it. But I felt the same way with turning that the corner, but it was the same skills that I had already flexed that muscle at a young age. And I was like, well, I did that and it worked out. You know, I'm going to leave this career because I am no longer happy in this career. This is not satisfying my actual soul, my dharma, my life's purpose. And even again, people didn't understand. Then I was like, but here's the great thing. You don't have to, because it's my life, you know?
Yeah. So the book that we've just swapped it with, the other book, is The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. So what did that book do for you? And at what point did it come into your life?
Probably around, I'm trying to think, it came out in 2006. I think probably around 2006, seven is probably when. And it also had a deeply profound impact on my life. It affirmed what I believed was true. That it was so what I thought, what I expected, the energy I was putting out in the world could be predictive, was incredibly powerful. And so, you know, one of my friends, Mike Dooley, says, you know, thoughts become things. So choose the good ones. And that reminds me sort of the secret of how much power we have in what we think. And I was so lit up by The Secret. I literally watched the movie and got in my car at 9:30 at night when my mother goes to sleep at about 9 usually, and drove an hour and 10 minutes to her house to bring her the DVD. That's how long ago it was, people. But I was like, Mom, you have to wake up and watch this now. She was like, oh my God, are you okay? But I was like, no, but this is the secret to life. And what it really did for me, though, it was very energizing and empowering in that it's not all what's happening out there. What matters so much is what's happening in here, what I think, what I put out there in the world, what I want. And there's nothing wrong with what I want. So anyway, that's all the stuff that The Secret did for me. I was so lit up for years and years. I bought a million copies, gave them to a million people. You know, you love a book when you can still look and you're like, wow, I still have 5 copies of The Secret. Yeah. And I will still give them out and buy more because I feel like everyone should, it doesn't have to be a secret. You can read it right here.
Yeah. What did your mom think of it?
My mother's always been very happy to let me lead. So even though I'm the youngest of 4, I have 3 older sisters, so I'm the youngest of 4 daughters. I was more like the designated oldest child. And she was like, if you're lit up about it, I'll watch it. And she was like, yes, I can see that. So she was always very open-minded and open-hearted and super loving. So she was always into us. Like, so if I was into it, she would be happy to be excited with me and be into it. So she was into it.
Yeah. So book number 3, a classic, The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra. And you say that you didn't read this book until the late 90s, but each one of those laws spoke to you deeply.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading it. And I think my husband was kind of nodding off in bed. And I was reading the book. And I was like, babe, hey, babe. He's like, what? I was like, did you know this? Like, I really felt like someone had been keeping me the keys to the universe. Someone had been keeping from me, kind of. And he's like, know what? And I was like, do you know that we can study the 7 spiritual laws? Like, do you know what they are? Do you know about the law of giving? Do you? He's like, dude, I'm sleeping. I don't know. But that's also not, that's rare for me to basically wake him up out of sleep. But I was so, again, it ignited something within me. And then my husband and I actually went and spent many years studying with Deepak at the Chopra Center and David G and David Simon, who is the partner there. That's how we for 15 years, we continued. And one of the things we did was studying these 7 spiritual laws of success with Deepak himself, which was amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly a book that is changing your life then, if it inspired you to spend 15 years studying.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Another classic follows this one, The 4 Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom by Don Miguel Ruiz. I love this book too. So simple and so profound.
Oh my God. What's interesting about this book is all of the agreements are profound, but the one that's like, don't take anything personally, was transformative. And the way that Don Miguel Ruiz presents it is like everyone is coming from their own nightmare, so to speak. I feel like maybe that's a dark version of it, but they're seeing life through the lens of their own experience, and that it's not about you. And that helped me be so much more generous. And I was always also in therapy all of these years and on my own evolutionary path, of course, but it stuck with me. It struck me like, if you cannot take it personally, there's all this space for compassion, for empathy, for standing up for the relationship when the other person is compromised in some way, and not being all tit for tat or not being super thin skinned, which has made me a better partner, a better mother, a better sister, a better friend. So, I mean, I loved all of the other ones, you know, do your best, striving for excellence, you know, be impeccable with your word, mm-hmm. also has had a profound impact on my life. But I feel like even prior to that, I was already getting that lesson in life. So the biggest takeaway from the 4 agreements was that it's like not about you.
Yeah.
And then when you're young, you like think it's all about you, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's really not.
Yeah. Yeah, if somebody's having a bad day, it's your fault. Exactly. You're absolutely right. It does free you up to be compassionate, because as long as you're thinking it's all about you, you're closed down to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So number five, De-Stressing by David G, who was on this show a few months back, and a lovely, lovely guest too. So tell us what it is about de-stressifying. Love that word.
Me too. I love him so much. He's been a mentor and a friend and a brother from another mother for decades. I met him very early on in my Chopra experience because he was the head of education at the Chopra Center for years. And he's been on his own now for many years, and he has many books out. And I could have picked any of his books. But I loved De-Stressifying because it spoke so much to how chronically stressed we are in this world. And his solutions are very action-based. And he works with police departments, and he works with veterans and Marines. And so what I love about the way that he presents this material that can be incredibly heady and can be like, people are like, meditation, no. And I was like that. I wanted to meditate. But really, until I met David G., even though it was at a Deepak event, but David G. was the person who broke down my walls and actually taught me to meditate. And I've gone on to become a certified meditation and Vedic wisdom teacher from his training stuff. There is an accessibility to his work in this book that makes it right for anyone who would just like to be less stressed. So he teaches really actionable techniques for anyone. And I love that, because the accessibility, this, and why he's so popular, but also this is also a book that I've given to many people who think they're not meditators, or that they didn't, you know, they missed the memo, or that you have to go to India and sit on a, you know, a mountain for 4 months or something. And it's none of that. And David J., I was calling my guru from Queens, because he's like a New Yorker with a New York accent. As soon as I met him, I was like, oh yeah, if you can meditate, dude, then I can definitely meditate, because he had such great New York energy to me. And I'm a New Yorker, so of course I think it's great. But I think the book itself is so valuable for anyone who's like, I really want to do this, but I don't know. Just read it. It's funny. It's case studies, but it gives you techniques that literally anyone can do. So that's why I love that book.
You know, it's a great word you used, accessibility, because I think that describes him. And I don't think you can write a really accessible book if you're not accessible yourself. And he is. He truly is.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, he's done his work.
Yeah, he's done his work. For sure. And you can tell. You can always tell. So number six. Now, this one is new to me. The Desire Map by Danielle Laporte.
So this book, and Danielle Laporte is someone I met years ago, but this book came into my life, and it rearranged the way I thought about going after goals. She calls it having goals with soul. I probably would have left entertainment and being a talent agent years earlier if I'd had this book earlier, because she talks about your core desired feelings, like really identifying how you want to feel in your life, and helps you get to it. So my number one core desired feeling has been and is now freedom, right? There's other things, and you could want to feel divine, and you could want to feel, you know, loved and cherished. You can want to feel excited and invigorated. Like there's, you know, she gives you 100 feeling words. So you don't have to come up with them yourself. But then you can back into every decision. This is what I learned in this book. Backing into every decision with asking, is doing this going to give me more of my core desired feelings, or give me less of my core desired feelings? And wow, if I had asked myself that question, you know, and I have no regrets, but I'm just saying, anyone listening, if you are having trouble reaching your goals, or you reach your goals, and for me what happened is I kept thinking, well, the next job, the next famous client, the more money, when I'm making this amount of money, then for sure I'm going to feel the way I want to feel. When I'm running an agency, maybe I just don't want to work for someone when I'm running an agency then. And then I got to like the top of the heap and I was like, oh crap, how I want to feel is not at the top of the heap. It's somewhere completely different, which then of course required that power pivot that we already talked about. But I just feel like Danielle is such a, oh, she's so brilliant. She's such a beautiful writer. So it's a pleasure to read the book. She's super funny, which I love. So she's spiritual and funny, tells lots of great stories. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. I love it.
So I'm going to get this one. And I think this is the kind of, it sounds like the kind of book that you want to give to your children as they're leaving home or something and beginning to make decisions in their life.
Yes.
And it's important. It's one of those things that you don't learn until later, until after you've tried several things that didn't fulfill your
exactly.
desires. Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'll make a note of that one. So number seven, just another classic. A big, big classic, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And you have chosen to talk about one of your favorite poems, which is also my favorite poem from his book. So tell us how you came across this book, what it did for you, and then please read us that poem.
I will. My mother actually had a copy of this book because in 73 is when it was written. And I was born in 64, so I was nine at that time. But I didn't read it until I became a parent myself. I married a widower, so I had three young teenage boys, like instantaneously. So I skipped the terrible twos and I went into the terrifying teens. That was scary. And my mother shared this book with me. And it is such a healthy, from a psychological point of view, it's such a healthy prescription for parenting in a loving way that is actually loving. So I will read this poem that I love. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. Oh my God, who knew it was going to be so emotional? You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backwards, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with, wait, hold on. And he bends you. He might that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hands be for gladness. For even as he loves the arrows that fly, so he loves also the bow that is stable.
I'm not surprised that you feel emotional about this, because this is something that is so fundamentally true, you know, about parenthood.
It is. Oh my God.
It has to touch you. It can't not touch you. I also love his one about, I think it's marriage. You may call it relationships. I'm not sure. But when he says, you know, it's really not about one of you possessing the other one. You stand together like two trees. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You might hear my geese in the background. I'm sorry. They're so loud and I can't stop them, but go ahead.
That's okay. That book was actually published originally, I think, in 1923. So your mother must have had a reprinted version. And it's still being published now because, you know.
That, I mean, think about what a forward thinker he was to in 1923 when kids had literally no rights and were property. Of parents, he's saying they're actually not your property. You don't own them. And I think that today's parenting, this also continues to be so relevant because there's so much with today's parenting, right? Where people are like, my daughter's my best friend. I'm like, no, she's not. And please stop, because you're an albatross around her neck. Trust me. Your daughter is your daughter. And when you grow up, you can have a beautiful, healthy relationship. That's appropriate. And you're probably never going to talk to your daughter about sex with her father. And you shouldn't, because you're not friends. And I almost feel like this quest for youth and this quest for, I don't know, there's something being lost when we're expecting our children to fulfill these roles as friends, you know, because they're not our friends. Even if you're friendly and you're fond and you love them, they're different, you know?
Yeah, well, just the very fact they're from a completely different generation and have different wants and needs and desires themselves.
Yes.
You know, yeah, you're right. Book number 8, again, I love this book. It made a profound impact on me. I read it back in, I think, the late 80s. And we've had it come up recently, just recently. It's come up 2 or 3 times. The Dance of Anger, A Woman's Guide to Changing the Patterns of Intimate Relationships, Harriet Lerner.
Oh, my God. I just love Harriet Lerner's work, all of it. All of it. She is such a brilliant clinician. She is such a skilled storyteller. She makes really complex things incredibly accessible. She normalizes our experiences. She helps us get rid of shame. She's just so beautiful. So this book, personally, I grew up in a family where anger was a forbidden emotion. So no one was allowed to be angry. And so I learned to, you know, twist anger into sadness. And of course it would eventually turn into depression or something else because you can't, like no human has the power to be like, I'm just not going to feel that feeling. So in reading that book, it was so validating for my own experience, what I needed to do to process and honor my anger and why it matters, why it's important to not cut off that part of myself, because there's a cost to cutting off that part of myself. And so, and I was, again, as I said, I've always been in therapy. So, I, you know, whatever self-helping stuff I was doing, I would then bring it into therapy. So I did a lot of work on that, because what happens if you can't honor your anger, if you don't honor your anger, is that it will just come out some other way. So I was like an expert at passive aggressive expression of anger, being sarcastic, giving a look, slamming a door, a heavy sigh, a roll of an eye. But again, this is being known in an obtuse way, right? Mm-hmm. It's not actually being known for what is the problem. You know, I used to say, oh yeah, she knew I was mad. That room got chilly. She knew. My therapist is like, but she didn't know why. So it's not helping you. So she normalized. And then she, and this was a book that was in a series, The Dance of Anger, The Dance of Intimacy, The Dance of Deception.
Yep.
Which were all amazing. And then she's gone on. I think there's 6 or 7 books in that series. Now she's writing about anger. Her last book was Why Can't You Apologize? All just, if you are not familiar with Dr. Harriet Lerner's work, anybody watching or listening, just read them all. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So good.
The big thing for me when I read that book was I realized that the resentment that I felt to my mother was anger, and I was not expressing it. And so therefore I was not even being authentic, you know, and that is a kind of passive aggressive approach. That was huge for me. And it really helped me reframe my relationship with her. Fabulous book.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, every, it's not just for women, but I think women especially will get something out of this book, all of those books.
Agreed.
Yeah. So number 9, Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, How the Courage to Be Vulnerable Transforms the Way We Live, Love, Parent, and Lead.
She's just amazing. I just fell in love with her humor, her honest heart. And I love that she's a therapist, but she's also a scientist. And so what really struck me about this and about her work is the numbers. She did the work to say the people who are the happiest are people who are wholehearted, meaning, A, they're the most boundaried, which speaks to my work and influenced my book, but they're engaged in life and they allow themselves to be vulnerable. So there was this whole shift in thinking. And because I read this later in my life and I'd already had like decades of therapy and I was I was pretty much a wholehearted living person by then. I just loved that this, that she created a how-to guide for other people, right? It's about the resiliency. She wrote, wholehearted living is not about engaging in our lives from a place of worthiness. It means cultivating the courage, compassion, and connection to wake up in the morning and think, no matter what gets done today and how much is left undone, I am enough. It's just beautiful. It's like, it's true. Like we're human doings and yet we're not. And there, it was such a reminder to slow down and be discerning about who you share your most tender heart with. It doesn't mean hide it away in a closet forever, but it means be discerning too, because I took it from both ways, right? It does, not everyone should have the backstage pass to your life. Not everyone should have that. They don't all deserve it. And lots of people do. And being wholehearted attracts other people who are wholehearted, you know? Yeah. So I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's got a fantastic reputation because it's earned it. The final book, Creating Affluence by Deepak Chopra.
So this was a bit of a wild card, let's say. Like I was like, huh, I wonder what Sandra's going to think about that one. This was a book that I started reading it. And there's a lot of books that Deepak has written that are so dense that I'm like, dude, not a possible. No, I cannot. I can't do the whole thing. This book is so, again, it's consumable because it's an ABC book, like A is for whatever. It's a book, another one that I carry around that I just open up for inspiration, because when I need to find something, or I just trust the universe. You know, sometimes you just have those books where you're like, I'm just going to open it up and see what happens. That book is one of those books. And what I love about Deepak is that as much as he's a doctor, and yes, he's a spiritual teacher without a doubt. And he's, you know, he's brought meditation to all the things he's done, we know. But he's also someone who's like, hey man, there's nothing wrong with affluence. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with wanting a nice life and nice things, because you can do both. You know, I used to say to my husband would sort of put a cap on. Listen, nobody needs to make more than this amount of money per year. I was like, first of all, we do right now. So let's just start there. I was like, babe, let's make all the money in the world and we can give it all away. Yeah. This is more money to do good work in the world. But there's also nothing wrong with wanting a nice sheets for your bed as well, you know? And so I felt like there was a normalization of you can be a good person and you can still want things. One of the ones I'm trying to think that influenced me the most was about E is for exalting in the successes of those you would consider your enemy, and they will become your biggest supporters. And it spoke to this a little shadow in myself of like jealousy or envy, you know, of other people, and being a little judgy. Like if someone was doing something that I wanted to do, even though I was doing plenty, I would just be like, meh, well, why is that person getting that? Or yeah. I don't think that they're not a legitimate, whatever, in my mind. And that really impacted me. And I was like, you know what? Why don't you take a look at their work and see what they're doing? And why don't you be supportive of what they're doing? And it really took that feeling left. And so anyway, even though for a small pocketbook, because that's what it is, it's profound. Like it is really, really deep. I recommend it to everybody and anybody, because if you just need a shot of inspiration, I feel like every time I open it, I read exactly what I'm needing to read in that moment.
Yeah. And I think people misunderstand affluence, and they misunderstand wealth, and they misunderstand money. And affluence is about being affluent in spirit as well as, you know, with your bank account as well. Yeah. And you can't do that if you're struggling to survive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is the truth. One of my friends who's an energy worker, she always, when she's testing people's like scarcity, like say this phrase and like muscle test, you know, it's okay for me to make more money than my friends, my family, or the poor. And I would do this with clients who are struggling, you know, and they'd be like, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's okay. Like, I feel bad saying that. And she's like, listen, that is a scarcity mindset. You can make all that money and give it to those people if you want to, like, but that does get in the way, our unconscious beliefs about things. Like, it makes me a not good person. So I agree with you. Affluence is, are you rich in spirit, in your heart, in your generosity, in your compassion? And all of those things are really what make up the life you want to live. And money too.
Yeah. So that's your 10 best books. What are you reading now?
Oh, because I've been doing my book, right? So I have not, truthfully, what I'm reading now is not much because I've been working so much. I've been on a virtual book tour for this book. So when I'm not doing interviews and, you know, teaching my courses, because I do that, I'm literally exhausted and sleeping. So I would love any recommendations anyone has for, like, the next great book to read.
Oh, so many. And this is why we're doing the book club, so that people can go and find the ones that people recommend the most. So tell us about Boundary Boss, because this is a book that is so badly needed. I mean, so many of us, you know, there's areas in our life, even if we're perfectly fine in our career, there's always an area in our life where we find it hard to draw boundaries. You know, what inspired you to write this?
Oh, my life as a boundary disaster was probably the beginning of what, you know, that planted the seed, not knowing for so many years that the pain I was experiencing or the conflict I was experiencing in my relationships had everything to do with the fact that I had terrible boundaries, meaning very, very malleable, very, very porous boundaries, we call them. And then when I shifted, so I went from, you know, entertainment is like not a hotbed of mental health, as you can imagine. So it's a very boundaryless place. I was, you know, representing clients who are similar age. I was single. I was like, wow, there's so much overlap. And again, that caused pain in my life. And then through my therapeutic process, I started realizing, because I had many brilliant therapists, but one for a really long time, who helped me see what was really happening. Was that I was saying yes when I wanted to say no. I wasn't allowing people to, I didn't tell people when I had a problem with something. I just acted it out, right? Because again, keep in mind, I came from a family system. I wasn't allowed to be angry. When I became a therapist, so I worked through that in my therapeutic process. And then I became a therapist. And I just could not believe the epidemic of disordered boundaries and the pain and chaos that it was creating in the lives of my clients. And so for years I was teaching and I was creating exercises and I was taking copious notes. And in 2015, I created a course because the need was so great and I wanted to reach more people. And I knew that the only way to do that was to teach people in groups or do something. I knew eventually it would be a book, but I wanted to see the real world results. What creates transformation around these boundary struggles? What is it? What do I need to teach people? It's not just about boundaries, but it's about language. And it's not just about language. It's about knowing yourself. So I come at it from the point of view of knowing yourself is the first thing, right? It's my five pillars of transformation. We start with self-awareness. What's not working? Where am I in pain? You know, I always say to people, you're not sure where your boundaries are terrible? Do a resentment inventory right now. That will reveal where usually a need is not getting met or a boundary has been crossed. And maybe the other person doesn't even know it, but we know it because we are keeping score. So each of us has a downloaded boundary blueprint is what I call it. And again, speaking of schemas, it's like the way that we organize the world, how we're supposed to be in relationships and in friendships, what is polite, what isn't. And most of us, if you were raised as a woman, most of us were raised and praised for being self-abandoning codependents.
Yeah.
That's it. This is where we got positive feedback. The more self-sacrificing you are, the better, right? The more, you know, be a good girl. I mean, that was drilled into my head. It's all about being polite. And it was like niceness was this virtue that was held way up here, but above all other things, like more important than pretty much anything else. So we were set up to fail when it comes to boundaries. And we don't need to feel bad about ourselves, right? Because it's literally a language that nobody taught us. We didn't learn it in school. We didn't learn it at home. I didn't learn it in grad school. Like, nobody's teaching it. And so I decided somebody needed to, and that somebody was me. So with all from my clients and from the courses, I did the course for almost 5 years before I wrote the book. Because then every year I did an extensive survey of what worked. So I was gathering real world data, not just from 25 years in the trenches with my therapy clients. Yes, there's that. But with women in this course, the book can be for men and women. It's sort of written toward cis women because that was my experience. But anyone can gain value from it because it's strategies and tools. There's a whole entire chapter on just scripts because people don't have the words. You just sometimes need a sentence starter. Yes. So you're like, oh,
yes.
Okay, now I can get going. So anyway, that was the longest way around the barn. I think I answered 17 questions, but why I wrote it is because I needed it. And it was the book that I needed when I was in my 20s. Mm. And I just don't want this next generation to live small and to be creating their own glass ceilings because they don't know the language of boundaries.
Yeah. You have some really great blog articles on your website. You know, the perfect shitstorm, codependence, narcissists, plus bad boundaries, the emotional roller coaster of boundary setting. And it is an emotional, I mean, it really is a deep emotional issue, isn't it? I mean, you know, some of the questions that you ask, you know, is start with the emotions. What do you feel? What comes up when you think about setting a limit on a communication or something? And, you know, we struggle so much with that. I love the fact that you are giving people the scripts because, you know, it's a great starting place. Once they've got a bit of confidence using your scripts, they can then, you know, start creating their own. And
yes. And you know what I think would be really helpful for people? And you can go and do it too. I created something because it would be good to know your baseline. Like, what is my own boundary skill baseline, right? Because this is what people always wanted to know. So I created a free quiz that people can take. It's just at boundaryquiz.com. Very easy. And I created 7 archetypes because you might be more of a peacekeeper or a pushover or an ice queen. Right. You might be, you know, there's a whole different, like 7 different ways that disordered boundaries can express themselves in our behavior. And it's so nuanced that it's not about bad or good, really, when it comes to boundaries. It's about effective or ineffective. Are they getting you what you want? Are you being accurately seen, known, heard in your life? Because that's what healthy boundaries do for you. They're not blocks to intimate relationships. They're actually the only bridges to deep intimacy, is being clear about what's okay with you and what's not okay with you, according to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that idea of the quiz because, I mean, it's really good to get a lot of people think, oh, no, I'm good at this. And then you do the quiz and you think, actually, I'm not. Not at all. Yeah. So you've just started a boundary boot camp.
I did, just literally now. The first live is not until next week.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's something that people could still join?
Yeah, they can actually right now. Just go to terrycole.com/boundary bootcamp. Make it as easy as possible for all the information. But it's an 8-week course. It's for men and women, or any gender identification is welcome to come on in. And you're going to spend the next 8 weeks with me because a lot of this stuff, you know, I have videos, right? For each week, we have different modules. But then there's a live every week that is a 75-minute live where I actually take questions that they come in ahead of time. They're curated. I mean, we've really gotten this. This is the one I started in 2015. So we've really gotten this down to a science of answering your specific questions. And you get all of the boundary scripts. But again, it's a linear process where we start with you understanding your boundary blueprint. Why are you yourself in particular? Like, there's no one size fits all. I could never just be like, this is what everyone should do, because it isn't true, right? You're literally, Sandy, your life experience is different than my life experience. What we learned is different, even if we were in the same generation, right? Because our families, our cultures, the country, all of those things. So there's a lot of deep diving in this course into yourself, because it is built on those five pillars of knowing yourself, which is, you know, all of my work is built on these five pillars of self-mastery that I created, which is self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-acceptance, which is so hard, self-compassion, which is so hard. And then that brings us into the fifth, which is self-mastery, which includes self-love and self-celebration. So it's very linear in that way. But I'm excited. There's hundreds of people from all over the world in it. And if you can't make the live calls, it's okay. Everything is videotaped, of course. We also rip the audio in case you just want to listen. We also create a transcript in case you just want to read, because really everybody learns so differently. So people are certainly welcome. Come on in if you want to do it. We really start the first live is next week.
So now you've also got, I think it's a closed Facebook group, Real Love Revolution. Tell us about that.
Well, it's private, so it's open, meaning, and it's only for people who identify as women, because it's most appropriate for people who are raised as women.
Right.
And there's probably about, we have almost 30,000 women in there to date. And it's just a great place to hang out. So you guys are welcome. Anyone who wants to come in who identifies as a woman can come into that group, where it's a lot of sharing, I do lives in there, I answer questions in there as well. Just a place where you're with like-minded, like-hearted individuals, kind of walking the same path, because really the people who are attracted to my work are people who are on their own evolutionary path in some way. I mean, I don't think that they're, for me, I don't look at, you know, when people talk about enlightenment, I would never even think to know that I even know what that means, other than from a psychological point of view, getting to the point of knowing yourself so deeply and so intimately, and embracing and celebrating who you really are, like getting that your preferences, your desires, your limits, and your deal breakers, which are what make up your boundaries, they're so unique to you. They're what make you, you, that they're things that we should share and celebrate. And there's nothing wrong with your preferences, your desires, your limits, and your deal breakers. But we need to know how to share them with people if we want people to A, know us, but also respect them. How is someone, you know, how much of the time you're like, that person's a boundary bully, a client will say to me. And I'm like, but did you tell them that you don't like that they're doing that thing? And they'd be like, no, but they should know. I'm like, but should they? Like, what are they? They have a crystal ball? Like, come on. We have to take responsibility for what we want if we're going to get what we want, you know?
So how do you define real love?
Well, real love always starts with self-love. I firmly believe that self-love is literally the only path to any other healthy, vibrant love. Whether that's friendship, whether that's siblings. I really do. I mean, mother and child love, might be the one exception, right? Because you cannot love yourself and you will still love your kid no matter what. But that's my thought about romantic love, because I have another course called Real Love Revolution and that comes out in February. I only do that course once a year. It's a deep dive. It's like 3 months of really diving deep into this. It's about, again, knowing yourself. You know, I think that the biggest problem or the biggest misconception is that, you know, love is all about being in the right place at the right time. Like, are you lucky in love? Like, trust me, that it has nothing to do with luck. It has everything to do with psychology, your mental wellness. Do you know yourself? Are you expecting someone else to fill a part of you that literally only self-love can fill? Because then we will only be disappointed in our romantic relationships, because it's no one else's job to do that. But here's the thing, it's also impossible. No one else can do that. So those are the things that I teach in that course and that I talk about. And probably the next book is going to be about love. I don't know. I'm on the fence. It's going to be about love or codependency. I haven't decided yet, but my literary agent is asking. I'm like, hi, I just put this book out. Can I enjoy it for like a minute, please?
Yeah. You had, with your keywords, you described yourself as a lover, mama, sister, author, teacher, seeker, speaker, meditator, happiness advocate, mental wellness warrior. Which is the one that you think defines you the most?
I think I'm a lover.
A lover.
I think I'm just a lover. I just love people. And I mean, besides the people I love, wow, man, I really love my people. But I love my human family. You know, like I love everyone. Like I do. Sounds weird to say, but I do. Like I have so much compassion for the human condition. And people's stories are endlessly fascinating to me. So I think probably that's the number one identification is a lover.
Mm. Do you ever look back and think who you might have become if you hadn't made that pivot?
Oh, I gotta say there's a part of me that believes I would always end up somewhere close to where I am. I'm glad I made that pivot and I'm glad I had that career because it was through that career that I met my husband, who I never thought I'd get married. I never wanted to get married. And then this unbelievable human came into my life and I was a talent agent and I met him through one of my clients. So I always think that meant to be, you know, I don't think I could have stayed on that path much longer. I would have pivoted into something because I was so, I cannot stay where I am not inspired.
Yeah.
And so I had become uninspired and then felt like I was a part of a toxic something that was not doing great things in the world. It's bad enough to not feel like you're contributing something great, but I was like, wow. Cause I had a niece who had a weight problem when she was a little kid. And I was like, what am I telling her by being in this world of modeling where everyone is a size minus two? What am I telling her about her value? Like I really got like existential about it. It was like, I need to get out of this toxic wasteland.
Yeah. Okay. Last question before we close. What is it that gets you out of bed and working every day? What
just
motivates
the thought,
you?
Yeah. The thought that I could, something that I'll do in this day, I will potentially help someone else lessen their own suffering. I'll teach them something. It's not that I will do it, right? Because it's not me. It's that I'll teach them something and be a catalyst for them to step into their more authentic self. Stop putting up with crap from people that they don't need to, like lessen their own suffering, value themselves in a bigger way, because that's really the whole thing for me. It's like the joy. I mean, of course, my family, my life, I love my chickens, I love my geese, I love living in the country. There's many things, my mom. But the truth about what motivates me to continue working at the pace that I do is the thought that if I reach just one person with our conversation today and something shifted for them that was positive, that is the meaning in my life.
Well, that's it. That's what you were looking for. Meaning. Yeah.
I found it.
You did it. Good for you. Terry Cole, thank you for adding your 10 best spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations. We've really enjoyed talking with you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sandy. I loved being with you.
Ditto. So for more information about Terry Cole's work and the Boundary Boss book and all of her workshops and courses, visit terrycole.com. But you've also got that other Boundary Boss book.com.
Yes, boundarybossbook.com, where people can buy the book. But then I have all these beautiful bonuses that if you buy the book now, even though it's been out since April, you get lots of courses and meditations and just a whole bunch of beautiful boundary stuff. So boundarybossbook.com.
And I know that you've actually released several great meditations. So thank you for that. Terry, thank you. Been a pleasure. And thank you at home for joining us. You can see previous videos in the series on our YouTube channel, as well as on the video page at the No BS Spiritual Book, where you could sign up for our newsletter and be the first to know who's coming up next. That's it for this week's show. I hope you'll join me again at the same time next week for another episode of the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me.